My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
That was a shooting gallery up there.
I could hear the tremble in his voice.
She suffered a fairly severe beating. The video is pretty graphic.
Justice for us seems almost impossible.
It's not fun to watch somebody die, and they knew she was in mortal peril.
They have not asked the hard questions. Why was the Capitol intentionally unsecure that day?
The FBI had information about security concerns before January 6th.
They're out for blood, and they're getting it. They appear to be winning.
Were the actions of the Capitol Police out of line? Were there violations in use of force?
Now I describe it as an inside job.
I'm ready to do whatever God calls me.
There's an old Chinese saying my ancestors learned before the Communist Party took over our country. The family is the essential unit of human society, and that you must have honor and defend your family. But it's not always easy to do.
When the regime gives the order, you have to kill.
My heart was pounding. I felt my body bouncing and twisting on the floor. They put numbers on our shoulders, then separated us into rows of even and odd numbers. I was number 9. My brother, he's still in prison. And my sister, she was sent to a labor camp without a trial. But there's one piece of evidence they haven't been able to destroy yet. I left everything behind. If I can't expose what they did to us, then all of our suffering would be for nothing.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits, and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
And welcome to the program. Great to have you with me. Thanks so much for being here. I know you have a choice in where you can listen each and every day. And I thank you for keeping it tuned here to Chosen Generation Radio. So excited to be with you today. It is Independence Day. It's interesting. I've been making that statement for several years. But this year, it feels like it's even more significant to make that statement. And you can see the push and the marketing push to turn it into, oh, well, it's just July the 4th. No, it's Independence Day. It marks our declaration of independence when we said enough is enough with tyranny. And we're going to be focused on that for the entirety of our program today. Matt Long joins me in hour number two, along with Scott Powell, Rediscovering America. He's the author of that book. Greg Strauss will be with us to talk Declaration of Independence. But joining me now, and I'm really excited to have him back on the program. It's been way too long. I can't even believe that it has been as long as it has been. But I want to welcome to the program. He is the founder of the Texas Nationalist Movement. He is the leader of Texit. He is a as we were kidding in the green room. He is a 20-year overnight success.
when you put it that way, Greg, I mean, you know, a 1990, look, I can, you know, people are amazed at this, but I track back all the way August 24th, 1996, somewhere around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I mean, that is the moment. Wow. And, you know, it's been that was the day that I made a pledge to work to see Texas become a self-governing independent nation, or until the grave digger pats me in the face with a shovel, whichever comes first.
Well, you know, Daniel, when we talk about, you know, the 20-year overnight success, somebody might say, oh, you know, you're making fun, but I'm not. It's really not. What it speaks to is the amount of time, effort, commitment, perseverance, faith that it takes. If you want to see something significant happen, you're going to have to sow some significant seed into the ground. You know, when you raise one of these skyscrapers, everybody says, oh, yeah, look at that sky. Yeah. Look at how far down into the ground that foundation has to go.
Yeah, look, there are lessons all over the place. You know, I mean, you could always fall back on the old cliche that the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago and the second best time is today, you know. But, you know, I looked at this, like I had a mentor. I mean, I know this is probably not why you had me on here to talk about this, but I had a mentor that came alongside of me when I was about 18, 19 years old. He had been a former coach. I mean, just a great Christian example, but he really imparted in me this belief that you have to think about things in the long term. And he always equated it to cathedral builders, you know, in Europe, you know, where it would take generations to build a cathedral.
Yeah.
And those generations would continue on with the project until it was done, because they wanted to do something that ultimately would be a reflection of the glory of the God that they worshiped. Mm-hmm. You know, the one who created them, and they wanted to make a creation that reflected their devotion to him. And so, you know, that was a generations in the making. Now, you know, the good news for this particular thing, you know, that we're working on, Texas independence, is this is not going to be a multi-generational project. You know, this is not like Scotland, where it took them 800 years between acts of union to their referendum, or, you know, 30 plus years from the time that Britain joined the common market to the time they got the Brexit vote. We're right around the corner from Texans being able to go to the polls and answer the question, should the state of Texas reassert its status as an independent nation? So, look, I'm closer to my last sandwich than I am my first. So it'll be our children and grandchildren that get to experience the fullness and opportunity that independence can bring. But I'm looking to take my little piece of it before I go on to glory.
Well, it's faith that perseveres. Boy, I tell you, with my accident and what I've been through, if I hadn't been, you know, if God hadn't put that into me and I hadn't learned that lesson, you know, for the 13, 14 years before the accident, this would have been a pretty impossible task. So I get that idea of it. What are the keys now? What makes it different now, in your view, from when you started 20 years ago? What's the stir stick in the pot?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's really a combination of things. I mean, so just a little background. So there were about, from, you know, 96 to about, you know, 2002, mid 2002. I refer to those as the wilderness years, right? We had no idea. Any of us that were out there advocating for independence just didn't know. So about, you know, mid 2002, 2003, we got together, a handful of us, and said, look, if we're going to do this, we need to do it right. And so we embarked on a study of independence movements around the world, historical, current, you know, I mean, we did the deepest dive you could possibly do in that amount of time. And one of the things that came out of that, obviously, was born the TNM, right, in November of 2005. Mm-hmm. But what came out of that was really this sense that, number one, the movement for self-determination is a global movement. You know, as much as the globalists want to pretend like they're winning, they're not. It's people like us that are winning around the world and have been. You know, you go to the end of World War II, there were roughly 54 recognized countries around the world. By the end of the 20th century, there were 195. So, you know, that doesn't look like globalists winning to me. Okay, but that being said, they all independence movements follow a trajectory, at least in modern times, right? Say the last 70 years, they follow a certain trajectory, and that's really what's happening here. And the time frames can be extended or compressed depending on internal momentum and external circumstances, and that gets me to a very long explanation to get to where I can answer your question.
Okay.
But yeah, look, you have to understand context, right? And,
sure.
And people need to understand that there is no one single thing that's driving this, you know, Texas to an inevitability. It's a big combination of things. There are these external forces, which, you know, you can look at as sort of the more global trend toward decentralization. You can look at the external forces as the breakdown between the states, the relationship between Texas and the federal system. You know, look at the border crisis. You know, one of the things that fueled the Brexit victory was the pushback against unrestricted mass migration that was coming about because of bad European Union policy. Well, guess what? We have that to the power of 10 here. You know, we have to remember that Texans want a secure border and they want a sound and solid immigration policy. And instead, what we get is more illegal aliens crossing the Texas-Mexico border every month than the number of troops that landed on the beaches of Normandy at D-Day. So, you know, we are getting the exact opposite of what we want, and that's forcing people into this situation where they're having to question every aspect of the relationship between Texas and the federal system, and even question why in the world, like Chip Roy did a couple of years ago, question, mm-hmm. you know, why in the world did we join the union in the first place if this is what it's going to be?
Well, one of the statements in the Declaration of Independence, we'll talk more about this probably this next hour with Greg Strauss, but that whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such forms as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. That's part of the foundation of Texas. That's part of it. What makes Texas unique amongst the 50 states relative to its ability to legally make the claim, hey, we can declare our national independence?
Well, so I'll refer to the Texas Constitution to answer okay. that one. You know, you just quoted from the Declaration of Independence. And
yes,
Texas, from the moment that it was a republic, had a clause in its constitution, right? So the Republic Constitution 1836, State Constitution 1845, even our current constitution. But here's what the current constitution says, Article 1, Section 2. says all political powers inherent in the people and all free governments are founded on their authority and instituted for their benefit. And the faith of the people of Texas stands pledged to the preservation of a Republican form of government. And subject to this limitation only, they have at all times the inalienable right to alter, reform, or abolish their government in such manner as they may think expedient. Now, what's interesting about that is if, you know, obviously it's very Jeffersonian, straight, almost straight out of the Declaration of Independence. But one of the things that I think is noteworthy about that is it is an explicit recognition of the right to alter, reform, or abolish, and declares it an inalienable right, which means it doesn't come from government or a Supreme Court or a piece of paper. It comes from our Creator. And so that being said, the Texas Constitution essentially creates this, and not creates it, but acknowledges it as an inalienable right. So, you know, it would be nice to be able to say that Texas has some unique ability or unique right to do this, but if it's an inalienable right, it's a right that is shared by all. Okay. Now, does that mean that there aren't some potential legal hurdles? Well, here's the good news. All states in the union have the ability to determine whether they want to be in or out. That's just the bottom line. And, you know, we can talk about that if you'd like. But there's one state in particular that has an extra hurdle to jump over, and that's Nevada. Because Nevada actually has a clause in their state constitution prohibiting withdrawing from the union. So for them to go through the legal process like we are, they would actually have to amend their constitution. But beyond that, the rest of us, it's voluntary. And, so, you know, we are looking forward to exercising that right.
So it being a constitutional right, which I follow that. Mm-hmm. There are several pieces of the Constitution that one could suggest presently we don't adhere to here in Texas, of the Texas Constitution. One of those has to do with marriage. Our Texas Constitution specifically says in Texas, marriage is between a man and a woman, period. There's been no stand taken by the current government at any level, even local, to say, hey, wait a minute, no, this is the Texas Constitution. Do we bring this Constitution with us? And is that something, I'm just asking, is that something that would be, because I know you and I share the same values. So would that be something that we would say, hey, you know what? Yeah, we're going to institute what the Constitution of Texas says is what we're going to do.
Yeah, I mean, you have to look at it, and it's really, really a process question, right? Okay. So people ask all the time, you know, they think we go to the polls, we vote on Texas becoming an independent nation, and then the next day it's, you know, Mad Max beyond Thunderdome, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, that there's a process, and we ultimately want there to be. And so the first part of that process is addressing constitutional issues, okay? Some people mistake that and think that we're dealing with the U.S. Constitution at that point, but that's not it at all.
Right.
Structurally, our existing state constitution is very much like a constitution for a constitutional republic for a self-governing independent nation. There are some gaps, okay? There are some things that are not included in our constitution by virtue of our relationship inside the federal union. So that being said, you know, there is this thought mistakenly by some people that we've got to have this constitutional convention and draft a new document. That's not the case at all. The constitution that we have is the governing document until it changes or is not. And so we could ultimately amend it to fill in the gaps. And in doing so, that becomes the constitution of a self-governing independent nation of Texas. It's suited and really gets us as close to where we need to be, you know, a few simple amendments and boom, it's done.
What about people talk about trade issues? Texas has, you know, a pretty significant economy. And obviously, if we were able to start producing oil again and producing petroleum and so forth and natural gas and so on here, that would elevate us quite significantly, not just within our neighborhood, but on the global economy as well. How do those trade agreements look, and what kind of a relationship would we then have with our neighbors to the north and to the east and to the west?
Yeah, it's a great question. And honestly, it's one that I don't get nearly enough. So thank you for asking it. You know, so, I mean, look, here's the issue with trade. I go back to one of the things that actually spurred me to work for Independence in 96 was actually a book that was published a couple of years before by a guy named John Nesbitt. It's called Global Paradox. And it was really about the telecommunications revolution and its impact on the global economy. And essentially saying that because we could communicate better, trade was now global. And it basically, when it comes to economics and trade, it shrunk the globe. And therein lied the paradox that while the world's trends pointed overwhelmingly toward economic interdependence on one hand, it pointed toward political independence on the other. Okay. So that being said, you know, Texas currently, even under the circumstances that we're in, we're the ninth largest economy in the world. Mm-hmm. And I think it won't be much longer probably until we get to number eight. But you know, that's a significant statistic for people to understand,
right?
As the ninth largest economy in the world, one of the things is we are the number one exporter, out of all states in the United States for manufactured goods. I mean, we're manufacturing, we're shipping it out. And I know, and I don't know if the stat currently holds, but I know that at one point, the port of Laredo was out exporting and importing. They were out trading the port of Los Angeles. You know, and you have to think the port of Los Angeles is where all the goods come in from China. But yet the port of Laredo was doing far more trade than the port of Los Angeles. So, you know, you begin to look at things like that and realize that the world wants to trade with Texas. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think we're going to have any problems with trade. You know, when it comes to the United States, they could be petulant, you know, but ultimately pragmatism is will likely rule the day, and we'll wind up with a free trade agreement. And at the end of the day, if they don't want a free trade agreement, I mean, you know, they've got one with Canada and Mexico. If they don't want a free trade agreement with us, that's fine. We'll just fall back and trade on the WTO schedule and, you know, and then enjoy next winter when you don't have enough money to keep your houses warm.
What about defense? We have a pretty tyrannical and pretty radical. I mean, when you think about what happened on January 6th, which was, you know, I stand with the January 6th prisoners of war. But many of those were Texans, are Texans. Texas has been a target of this tyrannical administration. My firm belief is that we need to take our National Guard. We need to go rescue these guys. We need to go get them out, plain and simple. But that's just maybe a radical opinion. But nonetheless, how do we manage that? What would happen if the tyrants in D.C. said, well, no, we don't want you to go and we're willing to create some kind of a civil conflict in order to stop it?
Yeah, it's a question we get often because, I mean, let's be honest, no one trusts the federal government.
Nope.
But, you know, I think that there are a couple of things. Number one is the fact that we even have to countenance the fact that the federal government would come murder people for voting in a way that they didn't like kind of tells us that we really need to be on the way out the door anyway, right? I mean, that's yep. some Bashar al-Assad, you know, Kim Jong-un, you know, some third world dictator kind of nonsense, right? So it really tells us all we need to know about them. But look, let's look at it from a practical perspective, okay? When, you know, the average voter turnout for independence referendums around the world is 85%, okay? So when you overlay that over a Texan vote, right? We're looking at 16, 17 million voters overall here in Texas, 85% voter turnout. You know, most recent polls show that 60% of Texas voters and 66% of likely voters would vote yes on Texan. Okay. So what you're contending with here is a federal government that will have to sit back essentially and watch the people in a very public way go to the polls in what they would refer to as the largest Democratic exercise in Texas history.
Right.
And you're going to have about somewhere between 8.6 to 9.2 million Texans who vote for Texas to become a self-governing independent nation. Now, not only do they have to watch it, the people in other states will watch it. The people around the world will watch it. And if the federal government decides to do something crazy like that, they have to understand what the consequences of that are. And for that, you know, for us, the pain would be temporary. But for them and for the union, it would be terminal. You would end up having states just outright declare independence. You would have the military fractured from the Joint Chiefs all the way down to the enlisted. You know, you would have the world, you would have global condemnation against the United States, because let's be honest, for the last 60 years, the federal government's foreign policy has been to respect the vote around the world, to the point that they have, you know, implemented economic sanctions or sent our grandfathers and fathers and sons off to fight, bleed, and die for the right of other people to determine how they are governed. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it is a bad scenario across the board for them. So, honestly, they've gamed it out just like we have. They know that militarily there's nothing they can do. So what they'll do is they'll slap about $1.5 billion worth of propaganda at it during the vote to try to convince every Texan that Texan means that grandma's going to die in a ditch. And, you know, we're going to get invaded China and get hit by an asteroid. You know, I mean, that's just what they're going to do, and they're going to lose.
We're going to have to get you back because there's several other things. We've had an influx of liberals here in Texas. One of the reasons why you and I talked about this, too, in the green room, that, you know, there's a priming for this is because of how Dade Phelan, and I say that on purpose, and you know, Greg Abbott and the rest of them are misbehaving. As well as the influx of liberals and then the military bases. So there's a lot for you and I to continue to cover in this. We're out of time for today. Thank you, Daniel, for coming on. DanielMiller.com is a great website to go to get your information. Am I right? Is that?
Look, I would encourage everyone right now to go to texitpetition.com.
Okay.
We're about to force the Texit question on the primary ballot in March of 2024, and we need all Texas voters to go sign the petition, and we'll get a vote on it in March if we do that. So texitpetition.com.
Excellent. Get signed up there, folks. texitpetition.com. Thank you, Daniel, for all that you're doing for this fight for independence. Texas can lead the way in restoring independence, not only for Texas, but for the United States of America as a whole as well. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. It's great to see you again.
Good to see you, brother. Good to see you. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back to talk the Declaration of Independence with Greg Strauss coming up right after this brief break. I'm your host, Pastor Greg. You're listening to Chosen Generation Radio.
So up next, we have Clan Slate. When you have different things like cancer and different diseases that are autoimmune related, it can really help with inflammation because you're helping clean the body. And Clean Slate is a formula that's made from a natural orthosilic acid that basically is put into a formulation that's naturally occurring that uses different processes from polarization to heating to cooling to different types of catalysts which will go in the body and really help communicate to get rid of those things that don't need to be there. People don't understand why there's so many autoimmune disorders, but our environment's toxic. The land, air, and water have changed. We've been exposed to nuclear war, and the issue is if there's a nuclear bomb or there's pollution or there's war in one country, it actually affects everything up to the stratosphere. So we're all connected, and we've really got to clean things out.
You can pick up your clean slate today at cgrforlife.com. That's cgrforlife.com. Pick up your clean slate today.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. Retailers, shopping channels, and now even banks have tried to cancel myself and MyPillow. Well, during these times, your support has meant everything to us. So my employees and I want to personally thank each and every one of you by passing the savings directly on to you. We're selling the best products ever for the best prices ever. For example, we have my standard size MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with your promo code. Or you can get custom fit with my premium queen size MyPillows, regularly $79.98, now just $29.98. Or my king size regular $89.98, now just $34.98. So go to MyPillow.com now and use the promo code on your screen, or call the 1-800 number below to receive this exclusive offer. If you do it right now, I'm going to include a free gift with your purchase. Thank you and God bless.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any different. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear. Even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Any of the products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
You can support Chosen Generation and make a tax-deductible donation by visiting www.chosengenerationradio.com. And now, back to Chosen Generation with Pastor Greg.
Look, I am for marriage between a man and a woman. I am for life from conception. I am for following the Bible, and I believe that our founders started this nation on biblical principles. I am in support of our military and believe that America should play a role in world security. I believe our Constitution was intended for a moral people and that the Bible contains the only true moral code. I believe we are all born sinners and that God in His grace and mercy sent His Son Jesus Christ to die for our sins, and that if we will confess our sins, He is just and righteous to forgive us our sins and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. I believe salvation is not just accomplished in a little prayer, but that it is found in how that transformation is lived out. Jesus is to be the Lord of our lives, and we should follow biblical precepts. This is not legalism or works, but a life lived out in love and honor towards the one who died for my sins. Faith without works is dead and is no faith at all. I believe that we will fall and that we need to have a repentant heart, and that God will ultimately bring us into perfect action through Jesus Christ. Spirit man perfected and soulish man in progress. I believe that we are not to live in guilt and shame when we fall, but we repent and get up and move closer to Jesus. I believe that if our nation will repent and turn from wickedness, that God will heal our land. I believe that as a Christian, I must occupy till He comes, and that to call evil wicked and to warn about those evil acts is a part of the mandate of Christianity. That to love also means to be willing to take the risk necessary to confront a friend with the truth in hopes that their heart will be turned, because their life matters, even if it means in that moment they will possibly hate me. It means that I must risk scorn to stand for truth, and that I can never sit silently by while evil attempts to conquer the world. God is my everything and Jesus is the love of my life. That does not make me weak, but strong, not silent, but bold, and not fearful, but courageous. Therefore, if you're my friend, while we may not fully agree, know that I share what I share because I care. If you strongly disagree with these beliefs, they are not debatable for me, and you can, if you choose, unfriend me. I do not say this in anger, but in love. I wish for you eyes to see and ears to hear that Jesus Christ is the only way to salvation, and that God, not man, gets to decide what is truth, life, and the way. God bless you.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. It is Independence Day. And let's get over here and take a look at what that says. The Declaration of Independence. The unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America. When, in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands. To dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I think that's a good place to take a pause and welcome my guests to the program. Greg Strauss joins us. Greg, welcome. Good to have you. Thanks for being here today. Happy Independence Day.
Happy Independence Day. Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. I wish that we could say, I assume as a student of the Declaration that you might agree with me. I wish that we could say that today we are experiencing the kind of independence that our founders envisioned for us, but I don't think so. I think we're more experiencing the one that says when in the course of events it's time to dissolve, that we're probably living that more closely than we are the actual independence. What do you think, Greg?
Yeah, I mean, I was just reading about, you know, communities around the country, especially California, canceling the 4th of July fireworks. And just thinking about, you know, how the founders must be rolling over in their graves to think that it's come to that you could be offended by the image of the U.S. flag, and that you could be offended by celebrating the 4th of July. It's just absurd, and it, you know, very, very concerning. It makes me sad, and it helps drive our resolve for pushing forward with this initiative that we're doing.
So talk to me about the initiative that you're involved in, and give me the website where people can go to get more information. Let's get that out there for them, and then we'll hit that a couple of times while you're with me today.
Great. So the website is www.sign1776.com. So SIGN 1776.com. And on that site, you know, there's a lot of historical information, there's statistics. We've got a section dedicated with historical details of the 56 signers, and with particular emphasis on sacrifices personal sacrifices that they made due to their signing of the document.
And every and I think a lot of people don't realize, I mean, but every single, you know, every single one of them lost fortunes as a result of making the decision to do that. And essentially, they were signing, well, they weren't essentially, they were signing a death warrant because they became an enemy of England as a result of the decision to make that, to do that.
Yeah, these men were hunted down because they signed the document, and there was suspicion that was going to happen. So the signatures, I've read accounts about how the signatures were not disclosed to the American public until 1777. I believe it was in January, but the original document that was the broadsides that were sent to the colonies only had, John Hancock's very large, prominent signature on it. The rest of them didn't get disclosed till later on.
Now, it's interesting also to note, and this has been something that I've shared with my audience. I'm not sure where your stance is on this, and my friend Matt Long and I is going to be on next hour, and I are going to talk some about this. But, you know, our founders were actually very devout Christians. In fact, we were talking last night, he and I, about Ben Franklin, and in his biography, he says that when he was about 6 or 7 years old, he considered himself to be a deist because he didn't have enough information to understand that he was a Christian. And everybody has grabbed that, and it's in the first like 5 or 6 pages of his biography. But everybody's grabbed that and said, oh, well, he was just a deist. But deists don't stand up in the middle of a Continental Congress and say, hey, you know what? We prayed every single day in this chamber, and we know that God's the one that delivered our victory over Great Britain. And now, if we don't get back on our knees and start praying, we're not going to have the documents, and we're not going to be able to form this nation.
Yeah, no, I mean, in doing some of my research, the founders believed that we were, actually chosen by God to have our independence.
Yeah.
And it was very important. And if you look at, if you look at the odds, if you looked at the finances of this country at that time, and you looked at the disorganization and lack of institutions, our military wasn't a very large, organized, well-funded military like the public has the confidence in now. It was ragtag militias that were being put together, and they, as we were winning battles against the British, a lot of the founders and the members of these militias actually said, the only way we're winning is because God has chosen us to be victorious in this battle, and that we are the righteous ones.
Well, and even the inalienable right idea that our rights come from the Creator, they even, as I understand it, contrasted with Locke, because John Locke's concept was that in one hand God held our liberties, and in the other hand man did. And many of our founders, I would argue, would say no. God didn't hold our rights in his hand. He endowed us with those rights. And that's a significantly different thing, which would explain why someone would pledge their very life, because in their mind, there's no separation between that declaration of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness and who they are. It's not something that's held out here that someone's handing them. It is literally who they are. And in order to end it, you would have to extinguish them. So they're pledging what they've already declared on paper they believe. Does that make sense?
I think the endowed part is quite profound for the time, especially. And then you look at the concept of sacrifice and the wrapped up in that, the very last line of the declaration where everyone pledges not just their money, but also their lives. And that sense of sacrifice, I think, was very important amongst all of them.
One of the things that we've watched over the last 50, 60 years in particular, and probably accelerated in the last 15 or 20, has been this anti-American sentiment. You mentioned as we opened about the disdain for the flag and even calling it the 4th of July. In reality, this is supposed to be Independence Day. The 4th of July is just a date on the calendar. This is Independence Day. That's really what we're celebrating. But the anti-American sentiment, the taking of a knee on sports fields, the turning their back on the flag, stuffing their hands in their pockets when the Star Spangled Banner is played, things of that nature. Do you believe that schools have indoctrinated an entire generation to hate this country?
Well, it definitely, yes. I personally believe that's what's going on. I'm just looking up these statistics here. So a few weeks ago, the National Assessment of Educational Progress report card was released. And, if you look at, they're definitely not teaching history and civics in our schools. With eighth graders, only 13% were proficient in history. And 22 scored proficient in civics. So, 13% scoring proficient in history. And I'd wager that those proficiency standards are probably not all that high.
Right, right.
Very scary numbers. We've got this school system that's putting, that's sending kids through it with no sense of how our government structure is supposed to work. No sense of history. I mean, I'm partially a product of those government schools myself.
Sure. How old are you, Greg, if you don't mind my asking?
I'm 48 now.
And there you go.
I didn't learn until I was in my late 30s about some very huge facts about the War of 1812, which I only learned because I was reading a movie script about the battle. It was called The Battle of New Orleans.
Yeah.
I thought the script was fantastic, but I thought the writer was a bit, just too creative and went overboard with the idea that the British had invaded D.C., Washington, D.C. in 1812 and had burned down the White House. And I mentioned this only out of my own ignorance, right? My own ignorance of history, because I didn't get taught history very well in school. It wasn't
right
that I didn't study it. They just didn't teach us any of these topics.
Right.
And find out that actually the British did invade Washington, D.C. in 1812, around 30 years or so after the founding of the country. And they didn't just take over the White House. They burned to the ground. They burned lots of stuff to the ground.
Yeah.
I was shocked. And then I said, wow, this is bad. That if I'm ahead of the curve and I don't know this, probably in a bad place.
What's interesting, and I've said this on the program, I'm 61, and I've said on the program a number of times early on, I said, because I started the show 11 years ago, so at that time I was 49, I guess, something along that line, 50, and I said back then, if you're under the age of 40, more or less, which is about, so in your age bracket, you probably don't know historical accuracy or historical truth, and you've been indoctrinated and you didn't even know it. It's one of the things that I've tried to share with some of my peers is, hey, don't be hard on the generation behind us because they were lied to from the get-go. They were lied to. And I know that happened. I've got five kids, and I battled this with my kids. They'd come home and say things. As a matter of fact, my son, who is 33, he almost didn't graduate from high school because he came home espousing, and I'm trying to remember the guy's name, is Michael Moore. He came home espousing a bunch of Michael Moore crap. And I'm like, whoa. Okay, let me show you the facts. And I took him and I showed him the truth. Well, then the next day he goes back in and the teacher's going on and he's like, he raises his hand and he's like, sir, I've done some research on this and this is what I've learned. Can we at least get both sides of the equation in? He got sent to the principal's office, Greg. They threatened to suspend him.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, we've seen lots of evidence of a Marxist culture creeping into the public school system and pushing socialism, pushing communism, pushing Marxism. And people might say, well, what's the big deal with that? I just saw a clip of Mark Dice in San Diego. He does these man on the street interviews, and the whole interview, you know, he's asking people walking around the beach, does it seem okay to you to have a communist as a public school teacher? And like 95% of the people in his interview said, yeah, sure, why not? What's the big deal? They don't get it. It's like, well, you know, the first thing the Marxists do is they have to remove religion from the society.
Yeah.
They remove God. They replace God with man. They try to teach everyone that you should worship this idealistic version of perfect man. You know, if people don't know what I'm talking about, go on YouTube and look up James Lindsay. has amazing talks on this topic. Very enlightening. I just got my, you know, my very first past education on a lot of this in the last couple of years. If you don't know how Marxism works and is laid out, you might not see it creeping in to every aspect of American life. And that's, you know, it's not the only evil thing that's going on in this country, but it's
a big one. It's a big one. Well, what else is interesting, and I was watching, you know, one of those reels or what have you, and somebody was basically pointing out, and I remember this from my days in the Air Force as a Cold War veteran. But, you know, in these other countries, whether it be Russia or China or Iran or Cuba or what have you, they're not in their schools learning how bad their country is. They're over there telling them how great their nation is, how they should be proud of the country that they live in, okay? They're not telling them how bad. And the commentator's comment was, you can't survive as a nation if you're telling generations of your own people that the country they live in is wicked and bad and evil and they shouldn't like it.
Yeah, it's I agree with all that. I think it's terrible that's what this is, the product that they're trying to create, and they're being successful at it. And you know, to see teachers with communist propaganda up on the walls of their classrooms, and how, you know, when did it start and how do we get here? You know, all great topics to discuss. It is scary. We should be getting taught how, you know, profoundly unique this country is, and look at the strengths. And, you know, this country has done so much to battle. You know, just look at the things that we get criticized about. Racism. We were in what was looking to be a, you know, we had made a lot of huge strides forward up until 2008. And then what we've seen since then is the political weaponization of identity politics to try to divide the people. And we're now looking at a full generation of this, you know, sophisticated, weaponized social media influence, digital influence over all of our youth to actually divide us all and, you know, convince everyone that our institutions were all created on the fundamental principle of racism and all of these un-American concepts that, you know, it's really not the best thing for the country. And right. A lot of it's based on, you know, it's a lot of lies. I mean, there's a lot of distortions of history and redefining of terms and all the, you know, all the other Alinsky tactics, mm-hmm. if you mm-hmm. call them that.
So let's we got about 6 minutes left, 5 minutes left. Really quick, give me your top five great things about America that you've come to know in this journey of being reeducated into the greatness of this country?
You know, I'm going to have to say that the American spirit, I still feel, is probably my favorite one. It's our strongest one. You know, we look at this crazy journey this last 3 years has been, with the pandemic, the misinformation, the censorship, and you know, like Americans weren't. There's still a very strong, smart, intelligent group out there that are willing to fight back against all that. So that American spirit, I think, is number one. Number two, with the Bill of Rights and our Constitution, and that sticking to that Bill of Rights, you know, again, it's like how we got to a point where the federal government was working hand in hand with the media and the big tech platforms to censor information. I mean, to me, this was like one of the biggest crimes of modern day history, that COVID treatments were suppressed. Ones that actually worked, where massive billions of dollars of our tax money was spent telling us things didn't work that do work. And just all the craziness there. I mean, how anyone thinks that you can control access to information, it's an absurd concept. We all have the right to information.
Yeah,
that's a huge right. You can't stop. And trying to censor things that go against your narrative for your corporate interests, it's not going to work. The information gets out there. You're going to slow it down, but you're not going to stop it.
You're here.
You know, so that, I mean, those are the biggest ones. Our free market capitalist. What's the best way to call it? Our system of free market capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
That gives
opportunities to everybody, which is one of the things. I mean, our Supreme Court, you know. Just, and everybody says, oh, they just made a racist decision. But I think Clarence Thomas, you know, has outlined it quite well. The reality is just the opposite. Bob Woodson has come out, and he's been talking about this for quite some time, that the idea of affirmative action was not equality. It was a concept of equity. And in reality, it denigrated groups of people, specifically Black Americans, by suggesting that the only way that a Black American could be successful was if the playing field was changed or altered in some way. And that's just an insult. It's an absolute insult. I'm so glad that they've overturned that an example.
I totally agree. I mean, but look, everything should be based on merit. Meritocracy. That's the system. That's also an important concept within capitalism. We want markets to be free and the best product, the best competitors to be the ones that succeed. We don't want where things have evolved. I mean, look, there's a whole discussion about how we've got an awful lot of crony capitalism that's going on today.
Steve Bannon gave a talk. Man, it's been probably at least 10 years now. 8 to 10 years ago, but he was asked to speak on capitalism, and he talked about capitalism and he framed it in moral terms. And his statements were, you cannot have American capitalism without morality. And it really goes back to our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, our Declaration of Independence, and the reality that our nation is founded on a Christian principle, and that's what keeps us in check. You can't have the kind of liberty that we have and then destroy the morality that maintains that liberty. And unfortunately, Greg, that is in fact, you know, a great part of what's happened. Sign1776.com. We're going to run out of time here. I want to get that back in again. You can see it up on your screen. Greg Strauss, sign1776.com. And Greg, what's going to happen with this final minute?
Well, we're going to keep this initiative going forward as it's building steam. We're going to be printing out the first batch physical signatures this fall and delivering them to Congress. But the effort goes on. There's going to be a new generation of youth graduating the following year, and we're just going to keep pushing forward that message. And every year we'll end up delivering these signatures. Our goal is to get to at least 3% of the American public. So that's going to be about 10 million signatures.
Awesome.
And looking forward to unrolling a scroll down the Washington Mall that I hope is 1 mile long, which will get us from the Washington Monument all the way to the steps of the Capitol building.
Like a William Wilberforce. I love it. Greg Strauss, sign1776.com. Happy Independence Day, brother. Thanks for being with me today. I greatly appreciate it.
It was great. Thank you very much, and happy Independence Day. God bless.
God bless. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back,